All right, well, we stepped into the phone booth and changed out of our Blue Jays talk. Oh, we're wearing the same thing. Anyhow, it's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan and Sportsnet, coming off the heels of the Jays' 6-0 win over the Cleveland Guardians. And the Jays in there 43-37. They head off to Boston to take on the Red Sox tomorrow, the first of a three-game series. Kevin Gausman was awfully good today, 8 shutout innings.
Great.
Third 8-inning outing of the year, tying him with Framber Valdez.
Wow. Never would have guessed that one.
No.
No.
Based on how much concern we've had about Kevin Gausman. And the month of June was not great for him. He's talked about that. He had 12 walks in his previous 4 starts after having won in the entire month before. But this was, without question, the best fastball of the year. I mean, he says that. John Schneider says it. You say it. I'm not going to disagree.
Yeah. That's new.
The Guardians helped out with some sloppy defense. And the good news is, if you are just joining us, if you were doing something else after the game, I don't know why you wouldn't have been listening to Blue Jays talk, because once again, I corrected Barker repeatedly for 60 minutes. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. had x-rays on his forearm after he was hit by a Tanner Bibee pitch. The x-rays were negative. Jose Ramirez was hit by Kevin Gausman pitch. He left the game. Both benchers were warned. His x-rays were negative, so there you go. Vladdy is, we'll wait and see if he's in the lineup tomorrow against the Red Sox.
Duct tape.
It certainly didn't seem as if people in the clubhouse are running around with their...
Yeah, but he didn't look good when he picked a bat up and he was squeezing it, and it went, Yeah. It didn't. That's never good.
And they do. I mean, the Jays do grip tests with their players.
They do, for sure.
No, they do.
Yeah,
I know. They do.
They pick this bat up and squeeze it.
No, they go, you're just... Anyhow. So we'll wait and see whether or not Vladdy is available tomorrow. But I mean, all things considered, look, Eric Lauer, Max Scherzer's outing last night. Yes, Jose Ramirez walked off the Jays, but I think most of us... It's not that I stopped watching, but most of us were concerned about how Max Scherzer did. Max Scherzer... not only pitched, frankly, better than I thought he'd pitch, although not up to his, as he says, not up to his standards, but he also said today he felt better than he did after his last rehab start. So as of now, what, he threw 83 pitches last night? Is it 83 pitches last night? You, all things considered, I would have to think when the Jays take on the Yankees, you'd be treating them as... just any other starter, wouldn't you?
No question. He was really good. Very confident coming out of that thing, thinking that when you had the ball to him, he's going to be good.
Anyhow.
Predictable.
Rob Bradford, Red Sox beat reporter with WEEI in Boston, joins us in a few minutes as we take a look at the Red Sox. You've also got Jays tickets to give away. But if you followed the Blue Jays minor league system, I mean, a couple of things to keep in mind about the Blue Jays minor league system. If you talk to a lot of people around the industry right now, there seems to be a sense that the Blue Jays minor league system, again, minor league rankings are only worth a certain thing, but there seems to be a sense that the Jays minor league system is going up a bit, just from national commentators. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I think it was either Mark Shapiro or Ross Atkins said in spring training that they thought by the end of the year, the Jays minor league system would be in the middle of the rankings. Yeah. And one of the names that a lot of people are keeping an eye on is Trey Yesavage. He has been promoted to Double A New Hampshire. His manager in New Hampshire is Brent Lavallee, and we're very pleased to be joined right now by Brent Lavallee. Brent, thanks so much for taking time out today to talk to us. We greatly appreciate it. Before we zero in on Trey Yesavage, just tell us a bit about how the year has gone so far for the Fisher Cats. Who some of the surprises have been for you?
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys, and pleasure to be on with you. Yeah, Trey's done a great job since joining us. Made his third start last night, went extremely well. But other guys we picked up, especially in the trade deadline last year, would have been RJ Schreck, Yohendrick Pinyongo. Both of them have already been moved up to Buffalo and AAA and finding their way up there. Some other guys named down here right now, Charles McAdoo, we picked up at the deadline, playing a solid third and first base. Jace Borfin, who was in Vancouver with myself last year, getting his first touch of Double A and doing a nice job. And you know, still improving as he's there. Cade Doty has returned from an injury, and he's healthy, looks as strong and as fast as he ever has. And I think he's hitting close to 300 right now, playing shortstop for the first time since college. So really happy with what Cade's doing. And then Peyton Williams is swinging it, coming out of a bit of a rough patch, but 6-7 homers, you know, average is climbing, and taking better at-bats every day. So pretty excited about some of the guys we got down here right now.
Brent, what is the biggest difference Trey has had to face or will have to face between Vancouver and moving up to AA?
Yeah, I just think it's the caliber of hitters, you know, and he's kind of reaching a caliber of player which's more similar to his talent level. And you just don't get those breaks in the lineup like maybe you did in at the high A or low A levels. You know, even the guy hitting 7, 8, 9 here is usually probably one of the better players at the level below. Which really puts the importance on filling up the zone, limiting free bases. It seems like mistakes just get punished here a little bit more by the hitters. So just got to be a little bit more sharp, got to be on your game plan. And, you know, these hitters all have strengths and weaknesses, and it's just identifying it and then executing your pitch in those spots and avoiding the hitter's hot spot.
Brett, do you have a checklist whenever you're watching a guy like Trey, you know, when his outing starts, about maybe strike one, about velocity, about controlling the running game? Like, is there a checklist that you would send the organization saying, okay, check this box, now I think it's sort of working on this one little box to make him that much better? Do you have a checklist? Is there a bunch of boxes he needs to check at this level?
Yeah, I mean, I can't really speak for what would get him up to AAA or beyond, but you know, for the first couple outings, it's figuring out who this young man is and how to work with him, how to handle him, and what his routines are. But I mean, there definitely is a checklist from as a manager. It's, you know, everything from how does he hold runners, what's his pick move like, you know, which off speed is in the zone more than the other, you know, what's the put away pitch against lefties, righties, you know, certain types of swings. So right now, Trey's checking them all. He's a terrific human. He's worked extremely hard to get here, and he's continuing to work hard while he's here to hopefully take the next step in the next couple months or whenever that comes. But it's kind of everything for us, you know, making sure he's landing the off speed, getting ahead of hitters, and then just really locating the fastball where he wants. You know, he's got a ton of ride on it, so it really, it's hard for hitters to catch up to it because it almost rises on the way in. So making sure that, you know, it's in a zone that is unhittable, untouchable, and then he has his two off-speed pitches to put hitters away with that both are plus, both are different looks, and he's been wonderful to work with, get to know. And but yeah, there's a long checklist for us managers, and it's just a matter of, you know, when we get there. And but he's checking every box I got for him right now.
Brent, when do you start giving input? You know, you mentioned he'd been there for three starts, and you know, I used to try and go through AA. It was sort of that growing pain. Good managers will let you figure it out, and then they'll come up and give you their 2 cents. Is that sort of the way you try and do it? Like, you know, he's a little older of a guy, sort of knows what his breaking ball looks like, what he needs to do to throw strike one, how he needs to be unpredictable. But when is there that time, or has it been already, that you walk up to him and go, hey, maybe do a little bit of this? I know he has a pitching coach, but you know, you are his manager. You're sort of his mentor when it comes to going to the next level, and you're the guy talking to the organization. Is there that moment? Has it been there yet?
No, right now we're just trying to learn Trey. You know, I think you really have to earn players' respect before you come to the table with some changes or additions or subtractions from what they're doing. We're building that up as we go. You know, it's a guy that I didn't get to spend much time with in spring training. He did start the prospect game for us, but I mean, our pitching coaches as well, they're terrific. They're professional. A great combo of Austin Bivens-Dirks and Tommy Caulfield, kind of give them the professional experience and then some of the more tactical kind of experience off of what we learned. So it's really a group effort. You know, the strength and conditioning group, the MP department, nutrition, like we're all very heavily involved in just helping reinforce small improvements in his daily work to make sure that the next start was better than the last. And yeah, you definitely don't want to come in too hot too soon, because that's a quick way to lose someone. You know, he's been doing this his whole life. We've only seen him for 15 innings maybe. Mm-hmm. So really can't come in too hot, but you know, there are things like, hey, I think, you know, you went to the slider here, why not the splitter? You know, the splitter kind of backs up. you know, this guy, this lefty may pull off and try to go pull side here with the wind and the short porch and right. Thinking back to the outing in Reading, which was his first one in Double A. And, you know, it's like, hey, that, you know, that splitter might have worked, you know, not diving into the barrel there. And, you know, just getting his feedback. And we have a bunch of really good systems that tell us how to attack each hitter. But, you know, there are those one-offs for wind, short porch, if a hitter's cheating or not. Because when you got stuff like his, these hitters got to cheat at times. And we can see that. And we've got, you know, 90, 80 games of experience against these teams, plus spring training. So there's things that we might know about our opponent that he doesn't at this moment. But, you know, you give him a couple circuits through this this league, and, you know, even giving him the ability to watch the first couple games of a week, he's made those adjustments before he's even touched the mound for that start. But he's been very receptive to everything we brought to the table, and just an ultimate professional and a great dude.
You know, we Kevin and I spent a couple of days ago, we were watching Paul Skeens and Mizorowski pitch before we came in to do our show. Of course, Chase Burns came up. There are a lot of really good young pitchers that have come up, and not just making initial impressions, but guys who've been able to continue to dominate. We tend to focus a lot on the majors. From what you see at your level, is the pitching as electric at Double A and in the minors as we see in the majors, you know? Like, because we're just, quite frankly, we're blown away. We had Jeff Passanine the other day. We were talking about all the young arms that we've seen and guys coming up throwing 103 or 102 and all this. You notice that at Double A as well, that the level of arms is just so much superior than it used to be?
Yeah, I do think so. This is also my first turn in Double A after spending 3 years in High A. But yeah, it's the stuff is there. Now these pitchers continue to improve as they go and refine. But we've run into a handful of starters that are 97 to 102. I remember Harrisburg, which is the Nationals, had a guy up to 102, and he held that velocity for 85, 90 pitches. And it's hard to believe that it gets much better than that. And so I think the quality of stuff is comparable. It's just, you know, how they refine it and how the command is, and if there's a tell or a tip from a pitcher when he throws a certain pitch that gets ironed out at these two levels before they get to the big leagues. But if there's much better than what we've been seeing, I'm very happy I'm not in the box anymore.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, whenever you were talking about all the scouting stuff that you have, I wish I would have had that when I was a player in Double A. I couldn't imagine how much better of a player and more prepared I would have been as an offensive player. For an evaluator, which side is easier to evaluate because of all the information? A pitcher's side or an everyday person's side?
I think when it comes to straight evaluating, I think the pitching might be easier, because you just know how that pitch is going to handle or be handled by a right-handed hitter or a left-handed hitter. Whereas on the offensive side, you're seeing a different look every night, whether it's, you know, a guy that's 96 with sink, a guy that's 96 with ride and some cut, you know, a third pitch that gets used more than others. So I think it's harder to evaluate the offensive side, because you could run into a guy throw 98 that just has a profile behind it that a certain hitter can handle really well, and that plays into his strengths. But then the next night you come out and see 96, 98, and it's a bowling ball sinker, and there's just certain swings that don't play well against that. So you could come in and sit on and watch a hitter of ours and 3-for-3, turn around some velo, and the next night see the same velo but a different fastball profile. And, you know, that could be some tough sledding for that young man that night. So I think evaluating hitters, you need to look at what type of profile they're running into. Whereas on the pitching side, it's, okay, how good is he holding runners? Is he quick to the plate? What's his secondary like? How much does he land it? And, you know, whether that's George Springer in the box or one of these Double A hitters, pretty sure if you execute 97 at the top with 25 inches of vert, you know, even some of the best in the world will have tough times with that. So yeah, if I'm a scout, I'm probably choosing to evaluate a pitcher over a hitter.
Yeah, I'm very intrigued to know the hitting side of it, because it does sound like with all the things that are going on and the different pitches and pitch types, that would be just not as easy to go, this guy can hit velocity like it was when I played and probably when you're around a little earlier, it was about, can that dude slug to the pull side against velocity? Can he beat the guy to the spot? It ain't that way anymore. Like if Ross Atkins called down there and said to you, this guy, what does he do well? What would be the first thing you would say out of his mouth? What would you be looking for?
Does he have a plan? You know, like that, yeah. And that's something you can't really judge, but these pitchers, oh, my lights just shut off. Guys, give me 1 second. Oh, there we go.
That's okay. We can still hear you.
We can still hear you. That's fine.
My office is smarter than I am here. if the hitter has a plan, which is a hard thing to quantify, but if there's no plan in the box, you don't have a shot. These guys on the mound are so good, and they know your holes, and they know where they got to get to beat you. So if you don't have a sound approach, that's step one. But then beyond that, it's, can he handle velo? And can he lay off a strike to ball breaking ball? Because I feel like all the guys in the big leagues, they can put it out of the zone and break it in. We were lucky or unlucky enough to run into Marcus Stroman last week and in a rehab assignment. And he did not throw one pitch that ended up in the middle of the plate. And, the velocity wasn't what some of these other guys are throwing. But when it's sinking, sliding, diving, riding on both sides to all-handedness of hitters, you got to have an approach, and then that's another conversation. But what's the approach look like, and how do they handle the pitch in the middle? And then how do we break off of that? And can you lay off of the breaking ball that starts as a strike and ends as a ball? Because when you get there, they can all do it.
That's great stuff.
Brent, listen, you've been really wonderful, really gracious with your time today. Thanks so much. Yeah. Terrific insights. Great to talk
to you. Thank you so much.
Best of luck. Thank you.
Yeah. See you, Brent. Most welcome, guys. Thanks for having me.
See you, buddy.
Brent Lavallee is manager of the AA New Hampshire Fisher Cats.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, we're going to see Brent Lavallee in the majors at some point. Not that.
It's amazing. None of that information existed when I played. None whatsoever. I had no idea what a guy looked like that I was facing from one start to the other in AA. No idea. No clue. And he's talking about scouting reports. And, I mean, that's unbelievable stuff. That I would just wonder if, I poke fun at the khaki thing. Because sometimes it is a little overwhelming. Sometimes you just need to get out of the dude's way because he's very athletic and he can do it better than everybody else. But when you hear somebody like Brent talking up to young hitters and pitchers who that could just take to a whole different level quicker,
yeah,
it's just elite stuff. It's kind of cool to listen to.
Look, we have fun, talking about the khakis and the khakification of the game. I love that word. It's got so many ways you could go with it. Here's the thing.
Over-cackified.
Here's the thing that you know about kids if you're a parent. And I'm not just talking about athletes. Kids learn differently now. Kids, this is old man talking, right? Kids grow up with a screen. They grow up with
iPad in their hand.
iPad. Like they just learn differently than we do. They don't go to the library and pull 30 books off the shelf and sit at a table and handwrite a term paper, which I used to do. Handwrite it and then type it up. I mean, that's just they learn differently. And, one of the things that when we had Trey Savage on, and we've had other young players on, I mean, it's obvious that, listen to interviews with Arjun Namala. He's completely comfortable talking about the data he's been given. Because
mm-hmm.
That's
all he knows.
That's how he grew up.
Yeah.
That's how he grew up.
Yeah.
So, we sit there, and I'm hoping people realize that, at least in my case, 90% of it is BS when it comes to the khakis.
Well, you're speaking for yourself.
I am. I have a lot of respect for what they do. And,
are you on the payroll?
The hell's what am I drinking? But the fact is, I do. Barker, we like to have fun with it.
That's we do.
Yeah. But anyway, I think
there's a fine line. I think, even the Jays,
cleansing my soul there. Did you get the sense my soul, or did you think I was just BSing?
I think it's a little bit more of that.
Okay.
I think there's a little for everybody. I think that's what the good organizations give just enough. And let the player figure out how they want to use it, which is kind of cool. But you got to have the athletes to do it. It's like last year. They couldn't actually apply what the khakis were giving them. This year they can. I mean, it's actually playing out. You can see it. So just because they have a little bit more talent than they had last year, which is kind of cool. So you need both. You need good khakis, and you need tons of talent. You mesh those two together, and you're talking about playoffs.
They're a little more khaki savvy or khaki comfortable.
Well, they seem to want to tell everybody that they're savvy. You know, they cleaned that up. There's no more, you know, books laying on chairs in front of lockers that you got to figure out how to, you know,
I don't think anybody read uses, it. Nobody uses books anymore. They don't use books. They use
iPads. It's a booklet. No, they don't you do a little homework and you know, you have some sources. And, you know, I think they've cleaned that part of it up. But it is, you know, it is kind of, I want to say, well, should I say neat? Is that a good word to use by?
No, neat's a stupid
You know,
word.
it's a sort of.
Like neat, neato?
I wonder cool, how, I wonder neato? How I would have related
no,
to.
No, I know how you would have related if somebody come up to you and said
no,
something.
No, I would have done anything it would take to go to the big leagues. Because I did that as a minor league player. I would have done anything. So if it would have taken me listening to a bunch of things that I have no idea what they're
okay,
saying.
Here's the thing,
okay,
though.
And acted like I knew exactly every single word you're saying, I'll take every single bit of that.
Here's the thing.
And go up and stomp things.
Wouldn't you be more inclined to listen to your hitting coach or your manager than some guy who walks up in khakis and says, hey, Kevin, I got a second for you.
Yeah, I think you gotta have a lot of trust, right? You gotta, that again, it's about the organization having trust that, oh, boy, I can't believe I'm saying this. That word process, oh, boy, it makes you just, that'll make you just give you the shivers, won't it? It's the process word. And Brent, I'm sure, is going through that a bunch with where he's at in AA, being the manager, right? You got to trust the process. Mm-hmm. If I'm telling you this, I'm giving you this information, it's because we've been there and done it before. We know it works. Trust me, you're going to make tons of money going forward because of this. Okay. I mean, it's just about that player buying into that and actually going up and thinking that if I do it this way, this organization is going to give me tons of chances to fail. And then once I figure it out, I'll succeed enough to get paid tons of money. It's a lot of buying, dude.
We've been giving you the chance to win Blue Jays tickets all season
long.
Like
how you stayed out of that,
Aaron Blair and Barker. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, you speak from experience. I'm not going to add anything to that.
No,
you were the guy who played.
No experience with the khaki thing and the.
No, but I mean, you were talking about when you played. I'm going to stay out of that. I can't say when I played. No, that's why you're here. You add the player point of view. I clean up the mistakes and provide the comic relief. We've been giving you the chance to win Blue Jays tickets all season long here in Blair and Barker. All you have to do is text the correct answer to our daily baseball trivia question to 590-590. Standard message and data rates may apply. I don't like that look. Our last question and answer was, he played for both the Yankees and Blue Jays but wore the cap of a different team for his Hall of Fame plaque. He played exclusively for American League teams after starting his career in the National League. He played only one season with the Jays, but as it was, yeah, spit it out, Jeff. Easy for you to say, but it was a memorable one.
Sound like me.
As he won the only World Series championship of his career.
Go ahead. Nobody's watching.
Shut up. The answer was Dave Winfield. Today's question is to win tickets to see the Jays and Yankees at the Rogers Center on July 3rd. He enjoyed two separate stints with the Blue Jays. Before his first stint in Toronto, he played exclusively in the National League, including with the Houston Astros before they returned to the American League. Later in his career, he rejoined the Blue Jays, who traded him away to the Yankees for two position players. Again, and this is for tickets to see the Jays and the Yankees at the Rogers Center on July 3rd. Biggest series of the year.
It is.
He enjoyed
after
two separate stints
series.
With the Blue Jays. Before his first stint in Toronto, he played exclusively in the NL, including with the Houston Astros before they returned to the American League. Later in his career, he rejoined the Blue Jays, who traded him away to the Yankees for two position players. You can text the answer to 590-590 for your shot to win. See rules at sportsnet.ca/590. As always, Kevin Barker. Standard message and data rates may apply.
Don't lie. Did you know the answer?
Yes, I knew the answer to this one. Is that it's actually, yes. It's obvious. The part about returning, for sure. It's a terrific trade. Kind of an under-the-radar trade. It was a good trade.
It's what the Jays need this year, under the radar.
Oh, he would.
Or a giant one.
I mean, I don't want to give it away because it would. If you could make this guy, if you could add a guy like this year, hello. That would be, yes, 150,000,000%. You would, yes, absolutely, in a heartbeat.
Anybody in their minor league system that's off limits?
Well, for me, Namala's off limits because I, Do you want Andrés Giménez to be your shortstop 3 years down the road? I think Namal is off limits. From what I have seen, from what people have said, from what people like Keith Law have said about him, people who, don't go around necessarily blowing prospects all the time, who can be pretty critical. They are rather taken with him. And Trey is savage because I know I'm going to need pitching next year.
Pick your phone up and read that out loud.
I probably know this already.
I doubt it.
This is from Jeff Passan. Tampa Bay Rays shortstop Wander Franco was found guilty of sexual abuse of a minor in the Dominican Republic for an illegal sexual relationship with a 14-year-old girl when he was 21. He received a 2-year prison sentence, that according to Jeff Passan.
Wow, that's crazy.
I mean, that's... I don't think anybody's surprised he's in prison.
No, absolutely not. But,
that's...
What a waste of a player it was.
Well... Yeah, that whole there are a number of disturbing angles to that story.
No kid.
If you've been doing any of the reading on it, there are a number of disturbing angles to that story. So 2 years for Wander Franco. The Jays are probably on their way right now as we speak. Probably in the air.
Biggest series of the season.
Oh Jesus! They will open a 3-game series against the Boston Red Sox tomorrow at Fenway Park. It is the first game at home for the Red Sox since they booted Rafael Devers to the
curb. Kicked him out.
Kicked his ass to the curb.
Yeah, they got better players.
Kicked him off the charter.
How dare you back talk us.
Kicked him off the charter. Said, get back to Fenway. We're sending you to San Francisco.
Cora's the MVP of this team, not you.
Rob Bradford is a Red Sox reporter with WEEI in Boston. He's host of the Baseball Isn't Boring podcast. He'll join us next. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet.
Hey, it's Nick Kiprios.
And I'm Justin Bourne.
We're diving deep into everything happening in Leafland and the biggest stories around the NHL.
Real Kipper and Bourne, weekdays from 4 to 6 on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to Blair and Barker. Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet. A reminder, the manager, John Schneider, will join us tomorrow from Fenway Park. Yep. If you've got a question for John Schneider, 416-413-3959 is the back leg line. Leave your name and location, please. And we'll pick the best one.
We won't.
No, we won't. But our staff will pick the best one. And
there's one guy.
We'll pass it on to John.
Yeah.
And John looks forward to answering your question.
He loves it.
He does. He said one of the things he likes is talking to people who are knowledgeable about baseball, and it's a nice change from coming on our show.
Our fans are the best.
So, anyhow, you didn't even hear what I said, did you?
I don't listen.
Let's bring in Rob Bradford. He's a Red Sox reporter with WEEI in Boston. He's host of the Baseball Isn't Boring podcast. How you doing, Mr. Bradford?
Hey, buddy.
Better now. My day just brightened up seeing and listening to you guys. It's awesome.
Man, you're really having a crap day, aren't you?
I took a red eye back from the West Coast, and as you guys know, it always seems like a good idea at the time.
Yes.
And then you realize it's really a terrible idea. It's a terrible idea. Yeah, awful.
First lie I was told as a beat writer was, take the red eye because you can have a drink on the plane, fall asleep, and hit the ground running. No. Because the people because the people who take red eye flights are generally not the type of people you want to be in a plane on.
It's fair.
And most of them don't plane with, and most of them don't sleep. Anyhow.
No, not good.
No.
Not good.
No.
But it was a good trip to the West Coast. A lot going on. Yeah. A lot going on.
I was
going to
say, I bet they welcomed you with open arms in San Francisco. This is going to be the first game in Boston since the Devers deal, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
How are fans going to react? I mean, they're not going to be able to – I don't think they're going to be able to boo anybody unless, Breslow takes the lineup card out. I don't – how are they going to react? Will there be chance of we want Rafi? I'm just wondering how they're going to react. Will there be any reaction?
Yeah, I think it all comes, it's simplistic, but it all comes down to if they play well, if they win, if they lead. I think that that's where the rubber's going to meet the road. When it doesn't if it doesn't go the way of the Red Sox, if they get down, and they've had some horrific first innings, if they get down early, you're going to hear some rumblings. You're going to hear some frustrations. Friday nights in Boston are a different demographic, a different crowd. You know, they're pouring beer on their face more than any other week in terms of any other day in the week. And so it could get a little bit rowdy if they go down, and you could hear some Devers stuff. But it's in their hands. I mean, this is how it's going to be going forward. If they want to push this conversation to the rear view, it's very simple. You win. We saw that the Monday after he was traded. They win in Seattle. The players all say, hey, there's a new energy. Everything's great. And all of a sudden, the Devers thing is pushed back. Now, you know, a few games later, they go on the West Coast, 3-6 road trip, worst offensive team in baseball. Now we're still talking about Devers. So it's all in their hands, really.
Do they have enough talent to make the playoffs, Rob?
No. I mean, to hang in there, maybe, if everything goes right, though, Kevin. But here's the thing. Yeah, there's been glimpses. You know, you can make the case that there's been glimpses. You have the Romy Gonzalez's and the Abraham Toros and the Carlos Narvaez's all having good years. But we saw this in the last week. They've all taken a downturn. And when you don't have that certainty in the lineup in the Rafael Devers, and they don't have that, by the way, they're replacing it with a rookie in Roman Anthony. They're replacing it with a rookie in Marcelo Meyer. So, yeah, if it turns the other way, I guess technically, but in order to be a realistic playoff team, you need Bregman back. Mm-hmm. You need to figure out another middle-of-the-order hitter. And most importantly, you need to get consistent, no questions about it, starting pitching, which they also haven't gotten.
Do the veteran players for the Red Sox still believe in Cora?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I think that this trade, there was a lot of, and you guys have seen this before, we're going to show everybody how good we are.
Right.
And that's great until you have to actually understand that, hey, you don't have one of the best hitters in baseball. Your DH position is under 200 without him. Your number two spot in the lineup looks completely different. And you're relying on guys who, be perfectly honest, aren't ready to be relied on. So they can say we have a good team. We're all in on it. You know, we're going to show everybody. But it's a lot harder to do that if you don't have the talent, if you don't have the alphas. So I think that's where they're at right now.
One of the things that would concern me is when I look at Marcelo Meyer and Roman Anthony, you know, I'm of the belief that when you bring your prospects up, the right thing to do, I like bringing prospects up actually at a time when the team is doing well and there's kind of that little security blanket, a little buffer for them.
Yep.
And it just seems to me that these two, now I've been more impressed with Meyer than Anthony, to be quite honest, from what I've seen on TV, but it just seems as if it feels to me, and I don't follow the team, and I'm not a fan, but it feels to me that there's a lot in their shoulders. And if I'm sort of sensing that, you know that they've got to be sensing that.
Yeah, well, what's bizarre, Jeff, is that when we were clamoring for Roman Anthony to get called up, they said, well, we got to bring it up on the right time. We don't want to bring him up. They literally said this.
Right.
We don't want to bring him up and have a lot of responsibility on him. And ultimately, that's exactly what's happening. I mean, there's no way around it. There's no room for interpretation. They put Roman Anthony, they've been putting him at the number two spot in the lineup and the number three spot in the lineup. And you know, it's been a lot for him. It's been, you know, we've had this narrative a million times now, right? We just saw it with Christian Campbell, another guy for the Red Sox who was on fire for the first month, gets a little dose of reality, has to go back down, and then all of a sudden we cite the same stuff. Mike Trout was sent down. Jackson Holliday was sent down. This happens, right? And it could happen with Roman Anthony. But you're absolutely right. The problem is that you don't want to put him in that situation if you don't have to, but out of nowhere, because of the timing of the Devers trade, that's exactly what has happened.
What's going on with Jarren Duran?
Boy, you know, you juxtapose what he was last year compared to what he was this year. It's completely different. Such a dynamic player last year. I mean, top 10 MVP votes. It really is. I couldn't put my finger on it exactly what's wrong, other than he's just not playing well. He's not playing well defensively. He's not playing well offensively. So, you know, he's running, he's getting run out there. They have no choice, but they've dropped him in the order sometimes. They had him DH one day. So, it comes back to the same thing, Kevin, which is in order for this thing to work, and Craig Breslow had the line, which is may come back to haunt him. Maybe he'll make it look like a genius, that we think that we'll get more wins doing it this way than that we were doing it before. That's before and after Devers. So if that is going to happen, then you have to have this. There's no room for interpretation. You have to have the good version of Jaren Duran along with a bunch of other stuff.
Hmm. You know, Walker Buehler, to me, he's been the biggest disappointment in the team, I suppose, maybe other than Jaren Duran. But what kind of puzzles me about him, and again, this is just from watching a couple of games, and I'd be lying if I said I watched every inning that he's pitched, but I know his walk numbers. But what kind of puzzles me is, it seems to me there are a lot of times, Rob, where he just can't put guys away.
Mm. Well, he walked 7 guys last time. I think the most he had ever walked before that was 5. That was one time last year. And before that, it was only 4. 7, you mentioned it. Not being able to put guys away, 7 walks. What does that tell you? Probably not really super confident to throw the ball over the plate, right?
Right.
And you know, he says he's healthy. Well, he kind of says he's healthy. Everyone else says he's healthy, and he says he doesn't want to talk about it, but he's healthy enough. They're going to give him another start. But this is, you know, this can't keep going on like this, and he knows that. And the good thing about Walker Buehler, I make this reference, you guys probably have had these guys before where they're much better in post-game press conferences when they suck, right?
Chris Bassett. Like,
Chris Bassett.
He's awesome.
Chris Bassett.
Oh, yeah.
Right, yeah. Yeah,
Chris Bassett cries when he sees an empty reporter's notebook. I mean, he really does.
We're all the big winners because of it, I guess.
Yes.
But it's, you know, I think that, you know, and I cited Josh Beckett. Like, when Beckett was bad, oh, my goodness, the expletives and the – it was great. Yep. It was entertaining. When he was good, it was boring. But Buehler the other day, he said all the right things. He said, I'm embarrassed. I know that, you know, my spot in rotation's in jeopardy, all of that. So there's that, but ultimately you have to perform. And for the Red Sox, it's a bad look because you have him, and then you have the guy that you basically let go. You gave a qualifying offer to, but you let go, and Nick Pivetta, mm-hmm. who's tearing it up with the Padres. So, this is not working out like the Red Sox had planned. Mm-hmm.
Rob, really good of you to join us. Thanks so much, as always. It should be a lot of fun this weekend.
Get some sleep, too.
I have a Rafi Devers bobblehead doll, which they gave away 2 weeks ago if you guys want it. So, I appreciate it.
I'll take it, actually. Thanks, Rob. You're the best. Be well.
Collect this item.
Take care. Rob Bradford.
Leave it to you. Take some free stuff. Yeah, I'll take it.
Damn right. He's a Red Sox reporter for WEEI in Boston. He's host of the Baseball Isn't Boring podcast.
Yeah, I want that hat.
It's a fun podcast.
I love his hat.
Yeah, I just love the Red Sox.
Yeah, it's the gift that keeps on giving. That's what they are. They really are.
And you know what? It's good. I had someone trying to explain this to me. I covered the Red Sox the year they broke the curse of the Bambino. And after the final game, a bunch of us were out. It was like the post-game media thing. And I wish I could remember who. I probably wouldn't remember now because I was probably like 3 sheets to the wind at that point.
You're tanked. You're tanked.
But the argument was, the point made was that winning, and we were sitting there saying, you know, winning the World Series, it's just not going to be as much fun. The whole Red Sox thing, the angst, and this person's point of view was, no, give it time. It's going to be better because there's nothing worse than people who haven't won anything for 4 generations who suddenly win something. The first time it really starts to suck.
Yeah.
I mean, they're thinking that, oh my God, I remember my great grandfather telling me that they didn't have a winning year for 50 years. This is what the history of this franchise. And that's why anytime anything like this happens in Boston, it does sort of it becomes dramatic. It becomes a narrative.
I don't know who they fire. End of the season, who do you fire? Whose fault is it? They've already gotten rid of the person they blamed, Devers.
They are not going to fire anybody.
You don't think so?
Cora's got the contract.
Life.
Well, you know,
Cora's got the contract.
Mm.
Breslow, they've invested a lot in him as the GM. You're not going to let him go. I think the equation has changed with John Henry and with the Fenway Sports Group. And I don't think anybody's going to pay the price for this.
Yeah,
no, I really don't.
It's more fun when they stink. It really is.
When
they were supposed to be good, now they stink.
Well,
oh, it's tremendous.
It's
great.
What I'm interested in, I find, that's why I asked Rob about bringing the prospects up. Because I've had this discussion. I mean, I covered the Montreal Expos.
Mm.
And they used to have a lot of good young players. And I remember, you know, and sometimes things don't work out, but people like Dan Duquette and Kevin Malone and Felipe Alou, when he was manager, said the worst thing you want to do is when you have a you don't want to bring a prospect up into a toxic situation. You don't want to bring a guy up where guys are looking at each other in the clubhouse, there's a little bit of stink eye going on. Oh. You don't want that. You want to be able to bring guys up when the team is performing well.
Yeah.
So that, you know, you're joining something positive. And
I tried to remember when I got called up with the Brewers. I think the Brewers stunk.
August.
I got called up.
Oh, you were
August.
Called up in August. Okay. I was going to say, I think the September, and I used to love that. I was a guy that used to love the September call-ups because I loved the fact you were rewarding people for having good minor league seasons. By giving them a couple of weeks of meal money and letting them feel like they're major leaguers. I
blame all them veteran players who complained about the busy buses.
Yeah.
You remember the older players?
Yes.
Like, oh, there's so many players. We got to stand. You've never stood.
Basically, the players.
Shut up.
The players gave that away in collective bargaining.
Absolutely.
They got rid of it.
The veteran guys who don't care about the young guy.
Yeah, they didn't want to have the.
Or the guy like me who that's all he did was trying to work hard. So that September, I made more money in September than I made all year.
Well, yeah,
it's a big deal for me.
I can think of
three or four players who I know for a fact yelled and screamed about that.
I can also think of guys I covered who were September call-ups who opened a couple eyes. All of a sudden, they went into spring training, and you know what? They were the second guy on the pecking order at second base, not the fourth guy.
I wonder about the question you asked, Rob, about that when you bring them up. I think it's different in Boston than it would be in Milwaukee. I think that's the difference.
I guess
when
is a good time to bring them up in Boston?
When he's ready. Yeah. Maybe it's more about the player than it actually is where the team's at. I think the Brewers stunk when I got caught up.
Have you watched those kids? Have you seen any of them?
They look like they're
I like the Meyer kid, but
they look like they're supposed to look, I think, on a team that don't really know where they're at.
Yeah.
I mean, Red Sox all over the place.
Jaron Duran is puzzling, man, because I thought last year he turned a corner. I thought last
expectations,
year he was.
I mean, he's coming into the season. Everybody expected him to do things. People handle that word. You roll your eyes all the time at me because you've never been expected to hit a homer or drive in runs or get on base, steal 75 base. You've never had that. It's big. It's a big deal. That adds a whole different element to trying to plan on having a good season. It's not the easiest thing to do. So
the thing that scared,
that doesn't really surprise me about the season. It's just how long it's lasted, I think, is a surprise.
Well, we saw.
Maybe they'll trade him.
Kind of the year. I mean, boy, if they did.
Would you take him if you're the Jays?
Hell yeah. In a heartbeat.
I mean, I.
Now, I will say that for me, the warning signs, we saw them early in the year, and I thought defensively, he looked to me like he looked a couple of years ago where he would just kind of, he was a bit of a butcher in the outfield. That's the thing that surprised me. His game seemed last year to clean up. It just seemed to, as Rob Bradford said, he was top 10 in MVP voting. He was a tremendous player.
I think they started telling him he can't play defense. They moved him around a lot, running.
That guy has something to do
with it. The more you tell me I stink at something, the harder I'm going to be getting good at it again.
I like him as a player.
I mean, he's fast as I'll get out. There has to be something in there because you've seen it already.
Yeah,
it's just how you get it out. Yeah, maybe it's a change of scenery.
Well,
you stick him in a leadoff spot in front of Bo. Oh boy,
he's
creating havoc.
He's a triples machine. Not many people in baseball are a triples machine. He's a triples machine.
Well, hit a single, steal second and third. Let Vladdy hit a weak sack fly to right on a fastball in.
It'll be an interesting series. You know, again, the Jays miss Garrett Crochet. They do get Walker Buehler, who I mean, they're talking about.
about Walker Buehler being traded at the trade deadline.
Yeah. Well, maybe he's one of those guys that's only good with one team.
Well, that's...
You know, he's good at listening to what that one team's got to say.
Yep.
You know, he knows that his sort of season starts maybe middle of September all the way to almost November.
Dodger Stadium's a lot easier to pitch in than Fenway Park.
Regular season means nothing with the Dodgers, right? Just you trying to stay healthy and you being okay. You don't have to be great. We come to the Red Sox because you're in the East. Red Sox coming off a couple of bad years. The expectations are there. Now you're expected to take the ball and go out there and dominate. It's a lot.
If you're the Blue Jays after today's game, you know, you're feeling pretty good about yourself. You've got Berríos. You've got Berríos and Bassett going and Lauer. You've got arrested bullpen. I mean, about as rested. I would say maybe about as rested as the bullpen. Bullpen's been a long time.
Mm-hmm.
You got Scherzer penciled in for your next start. This is kind of the most stable. This is the most stable your pitching's been probably all year. You're getting Jimmy back on Monday.
Yeah.
Yariel Rodriguez.
I want to see Hoffman doing this in Boston. I want to see him with the good velocity, the good locating of the velocity, the good spin, the splits. That was as good as his splits been. I mean, he had a couple where they were,
but for the most part,
I just said, that means not good.
No, but I said he also threw a couple that were really good.
He threw some really good ones, yeah. You know, I think the Vladdy thing with the fastballs in, you know, you're getting hit in there a couple times. Now, all of a sudden, he's got to think about it in there. What's that do to his mechanics lower half? I've been there. You know, I got hit by a lefty one time. It took me like a month just to force myself to stay in there. It'll be a thing. I mean, to throw harder than they've ever thrown. So, you know, and everybody knows they can get him out there. That's a thing, too,
I think. Can I ask you this?
At bats with runners on base, you do that to the Red Sox, you will win more games than you'll lose.
Maybe I'm being too much of an optimist here.
You are.
Probably. Do you think, though, that getting hit, that may be the thing that gets Vladdy to finally realize that he does need a plan B?
The plan B for me is mechanical. He ain't going to change mechanics. You know, he's already
signed his contract.
He ain't changing the mechanics. All it's just buying into how do I get him out of there? And Willie, I don't know if he cares. I've known for a month. Why hasn't he known for a month? Why hadn't people around him known for a month? Maybe they do, and they don't know how to tell him. Maybe that's why Victor and Edwin are around. They're supposed to tell him. If he don't know now,
yeah,
he ain't paying attention. He don't know now. You know, now you're going to have to learn the hard way, and it's going to hurt.
But that's what I'm saying. That might be... You might be more apt to get a response from a guy because of that.
Maybe don't like it in there. Maybe that's it. I didn't like it in there. Most dudes that like to get the head out don't like it in there. You got to be real good at what you're not swinging at, meaning that ball a little in off the plate. Nobody likes that. There's only one Barry.
By the way, Stephen Vogt.
Mad.
Talking about the dueling hit by pitches.
Calling John out, probably.
He did call him out in the game. I was just reading what Stephen Vogt said post game, and it's not there. Basically, what he said the same thing that we saw him when he was motioning to John Schneider during the game. He said was, you know, we expected it, but you expect a guy to get hit in the hip, not in the arm. And as we talked about, if you watch the replay,
the old Teddy Powers pitching coach that I used to have for many years said, aim right for their ribs. If they don't get out of the way, tough.
Teddy Powers.
Boy, you like two fake hips. Funniest thing I ever seen is pulling the on-deck circle up to home plate with two fake hips. The greatest thing I ever seen.
Teddy Powers.
Oh, I love
it. That's it for us. We'll be back tomorrow from 4 to 6 Eastern on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and Sportsnet. Do not forget, the manager, John Schneider, joins us 416-413-3959 if you got a question for John. In the meantime, have a great night.